CJ Stroud is a proven fantasy football talent elevator, but has he launched himself into the MVP conversation after his Week 10 win? Can you start both Lions running backs with confidence going forward? And Jacksonville, whoa, boy, what is our panic level on the Jacksonville Jaguars right now? All that and more coming up on the Week 10 Sunday Recap. It's Monday, November 13th. I'm Matt Harmon. Welcome to the Yahoo Fantasy Football Show. It is a hell of a day to talk ball, and joining me to do just that is Scott Pianowski. Scott, what's going on, buddy?
Not much. It was a fun week. Probably the most exciting week of the NFL season and maybe even the fantasy season. Although our opening event, the Sunday night game, it was a game that was played. It had some drama. It wasn't maybe the most fantasy fruitful game, but we'll get through it.
All of the games that everybody watched, including all the way back to Thursday night, the Germany game, Sunday night football, probably not the best so far from the Week 10 showing, but almost everything else was great. Almost everything else was electric. So I can't wait to talk about all of that stuff. Before we get into all that, reminder, send in what's got you panicked to the People's Panic Meter for the episode tomorrow. The trade deadline is this week in fantasy football, November 18th. Saturday, November 18th. So whatever's got you panicked, hopefully we can help you about it. fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Make sure you hit that there. Without any further ado, let's get into Sunday Night Football, the game we lead off with here. Raiders 16, Jets 12. Scott, talk about the Raiders in a second. The Jets have now gone 36 possessions without scoring a touchdown, and it's just a rough watch. I know it's because we've seen them back-to-back in island games. You know, Monday Night Football last week, Sunday Night Football. It just... I saw Dan Hanses from the NFL Network, who's obviously a big Jets fan. He just said that the offense is lost at sea and no changes are ever made. And look, Aaron Rodgers says he's coming back in mid-December. That's what he's going to try to do. Will the Jets even be alive by then? If they continue to roll this plan out there, whether it's Zach Wilson, whether it's the plan on offense, they're not going to be alive by the time he's allegedly coming back.
You know, it's really something that we suffered through the Broncos last year with Nat Hackett, head coach, and then he gets the coordinator job with the Jets because of his relationship with Aaron Rodgers. Obviously, nobody could have anticipated that would be a dead issue in four snaps. And so we're suffering through. You watch this game tonight, right? The Raiders are defending Breece Hall really well against the run. Why not get Breece Hall in space, get him the ball as a receiver? They finally do that in the fourth quarter, and he breaks off a couple of good receptions. I feel like that was there all day if they wanted to do that, and reluctant to do it. Both these offenses actually remind me of each other, where they're at least stepping into their best players, right? I mean, Antonio Pierce has made it clear, Josh Jacobs, you're our guy. What plays do you like to run? Get him 27 carries in this game, couple of catches. So 29 touches for him. The Jets are all about Garrett Wilson getting targeted. He had 14 targets. Devontae Adams had 13 targets. So you have two teams struggling with limited quarterbacks, a feature back, a alpha receiver you want to pepper with targets. Jacoby Myers will have better days than he did today. He didn't do much. Every once in a while, tight end pops. Conklin had 7 catches. Michael Mayer had a really nice catch for the only touchdown in this game. But there is not... Matt, when we sit down to do our prep work, our rankings, our, you know, the extensive previews that you do, and my sleepers and everything, these are not teams we're looking at. You're not going deep here. You know where the bread is buttered, and most weeks you're hoping maybe they can kick and scream and get 20 points, and tonight neither team could do it.
Right. This was the game we had in the skip preview column because, well, it was one you could have skipped. I mean, even down to stuff like Garrett Wilson's on the sideline getting his elbow looked at, like, you know, all jerked around. And then in the next possession, he's throwing a pass on a trick play. It's like, what are we doing here? You know, like, can we put a little bit more thought behind this? Like, this offense has no margin for error, which you would if you had Aaron Rodgers as your quarterback for the New York Jets. That's fine. You can run like a low margin for error offense. You can run Alan Lazard out there as your wide receiver, too. I mean, you shouldn't do that under any circumstance. I mean, it was a horrible contract to give out to him, and it was a horrible thing to just roll him out there as the wide receiver too. I mean, they thought Corey Davis might participate in this season. He ended up not. But just so many like things have gone awry that it's like, yeah, if Aaron Rodgers was on this offense, they wouldn't go 36 drives without a touchdown. But I don't think they'd be a good team. I don't think they'd be a good offense. This is a deeply, deeply flawed operation that goes beyond the fact that Zach Wilson's playing. Although, like, Zach Wilson is bad. And, he has a good arm. You could see that when he's trying to push the ball down the field at the end of the game. But it's just not there mentally. It's not there for so many different reasons. Yeah, great job on the Hail Mary. But, I mean, come on, man. Like, everything else from an execution standpoint, that pick that he threw was, I mean, deliciously horrible. Deliciously horrible. So, the Jets are what they are. I think the Raiders, at least, you're right, they've leaned in fully to this Josh Jacobs thing. He has the fumble, which, you know, they could have put that game away if Josh Jacobs doesn't fumble that ball. But 27 carries over 100 yards. He has two catches as well. He's just been the identity force of that team. And I give Antonio Pierce and the Raiders a lot of credit for changing their identity from this, like, Jimmy Garoppolo pass-heavy offense. Just like, nope, we are just going to run the damn ball. I mean, literally, he said, we need to run the damn ball at in the halftime interview. And that's what they did. And they've taken their shots to Devontae Adams and some of these other guys. And obviously, because of how good those players are, Myers, who doesn't have a big game here, but especially Adams, that's enough, I think, to build a team around with Max Crosby and Robert Spillane and some of these defensive players having that stop unit play above expectation.
Yeah, it's really fun to watch Max Crosby every snap. Spillane obviously has the big pick in this game, and Pierce had a lot of glowing things to say about him. Now, unfortunately, Antonio Pierce, your tour of New York with the Giants and Jets coming into Vegas, that's over with now. New York has been shut down. Now you're playing the Dolphins and the Chiefs. So
yeah,
you know, lots of luck rushing 27 times at Josh Jacobs in those games. But the big thing here is that, again, let your best players be your best players. We saw how frustrated Devontae Adams was a couple weeks ago, Monday night. The Raiders get their butts kicked in Detroit, a game that really should have been incredibly lopsided. The final score wasn't that bad, but the yardage was. And they needed to get this team back on the reservation. They had quit on Josh McDaniels. At least they can believe in Antonio Pierce. The body language is better with Devontae Adams the last 2 weeks. He's getting peppered off the bus. He gets the 14 targets today. And I would think that, you know, with the Dolphins and Chiefs, they're going to score some points, even though the Chiefs hasn't, you know, their offense hasn't been what we normally expect. But again, they'll have to be a little – they've been hiding O'Connell, and let's be fair, right? Even though he made that nice kind of 50-50 ball throw to Mayer on a broken play near the goal line, they knew that they didn't have to score a lot of points to beat the Giants and Jets. You know, they win 30-6 and 16-12. So really just, you know, 13, 14 points would have won those games. They can't play that way the next couple of weeks. So I think we've weathered the storm with Devontae Adams, and things are going to probably get a lot better when the game script flips a little bit in the coming weeks.
Yes, I think Adams, look, as long as he's involved in the game plan, because he's really good, he should be involved in the game plan, and this team is not losing and not being embarrassed, he's going to be happy and engaged and a part of the process no matter what the future holds for the Raiders. Right now, Scott, 11 teams, producer Colin descended this, 11 teams in the AFC are 500 and better. The Jets, Chargers, Broncos, Titans, and Patriots are the only teams under. If the playoffs started today, which they don't, the 1-7 seeds would be Kansas City, Baltimore, Jacksonville, Miami, Pittsburgh, Cleveland, Houston, no Bills, no Bengals. We'll talk about all of that. I mean, the Raiders are 5-5, and they're the 11th seed. Like, the AFC is as packed as ever.
And this is what football has, the NFL has over any other sport, right? Every game is critical, and it feels like it just to get, you know, the stomach punch the Bengals absorbed today. They were so close to salting that game away, and Tyler Boyd can't come up with a touchdown. So many games came down to the final kick today. It feels like one play is probably going to decide who wins the NFC South. You know, the NFL has the greatest model, even though I still think the playoff model of six teams per conference, the two byes, I think that works better. But even seven, as long as they don't keep extending it, which I'm sure they will. You know, money is usually something that motivates these entities. But the NFL still has a regular season that is preserved for integrity, unlike other sports. You know, hockey and basketball, it's all about load management. So many teams make the playoffs, and you can go deep in the NHL playoffs as an 8 seed. Even the NBA now, we've seen last year, Miami Heat went to the finals. They were an 8 seed. They just get healthy and they gelled at the right time. So the NFL has, you know, this, why is the NFL the cash cow? Well, fantasy is huge and you can pick the games, you can bet on the games. That's huge. But also just the gravity of every game week to week can't be matched.
Yeah, I really think, yeah, obviously all that stuff, fantasy and betting and everything is a driving force. But really that down to the core of football is what makes that everything matters so much. The critical nature and the gravity of everything is what makes this sport so special. And there are a lot of instances of that in week 10 here. So let's get into it. Let's get into the headliners here for this week, Scott, starting with that stomach punch that you mentioned, Texans 30, Bengals 27. I mean, Scott, are there enough platitudes, nice things, complimentary statements to say about CJ Stroud at this point? I saw you were one of many people saying like CJ Stroud is now in the MVP conversation. Shout out to our buddy and coworker Frank Schwab, actually wrote that in an article on our website on November 6th. So classic Frank, ahead of the curve here. I know we just said it last week, statement game for CJ Stroud. Yet another kind of statement game for CJ Stroud, you know, going into Cincinnati, beating the Bengals. He threw a late interception that you thought it might be like the, oh no, did everybody jinx CJ Stroud by putting him in the MVP conversation in the middle of the game on Twitter? But it ends up not being the case. And CJ Stroud, again, yet another statement game here, going and beating the Bengals in Cincinnati.
Yeah, CJ Stroud wins the NFL for the second straight week. And in a season defined by poor quarterback play and injured quarterbacks and struggling offenses, give CJ Stroud a team that had a losing record. Give CJ Stroud, and we like Nico Collins, ordinary receivers, and Nico Collins didn't even play today. Give CJ Stroud ordinary running backs. Give him a less than average offensive line, and it doesn't matter. He makes plays on platform. He makes throws off platform. When the plays get out of structure, he still looks downfield. He's athletic. He can zing it in there when he has to. He can throw with touch when he has to. His decision-making is outstanding. Just his second interception today. You could even make a case that maybe he could play with his hair on fire a little bit more because the interception rate is so tidy. That wasn't a great pick today, but whatever. We're in November. He's got two interceptions. I'm fine with it. In a year where all the signature quarterbacks seem to have like 10. Yes, CJ Stroud is in the MVP conversation. Not surprised that Schwab was a week ahead of that. Follow Frank Schwab. He's a fantasy player too, not just a great NFL and gambling writer. He will make you a better fantasy player and a better NFL fan. And CJ Stroud will drag receivers to relevance. Noah Brown blows up. I said last week, oh, this is surely the best game Noah Brown will have. He had better production. He just didn't have the touchdown this week, but 7 for 172. And he's wide open on some of these plays. Again, speaks to Stroud sometimes extending the play, but Noah Brown's good. Dalton Schultz, a tight end position, had such a nice rally of late. Even Devin Singletary, who went nowhere, was productive in this game. He runs for a buck 50 and a touchdown. I don't look now, Jaguars. You're only one game ahead. I'm at this point, I know Houston's, it's their year ahead of schedule here, a year or two ahead of schedule. I hope the Texans win the division. The Jaguars frustrate the heck out of me, and Stroud's so easy to like, and Noah Brown's easy to like, and we're Nico guys, and we're Tank Dell guys, and we're D'Amico Ryan's guys. The Texans are a really fun team, and they beat a good Bengals team. You know, maybe not the Bengals at their best. They didn't have T. Higgins. They had a limited Ja'Marr Chase, although he still got home for fantasy on just 6 targets. But maybe it doesn't mean that much when you beat the Buccaneers last week. You march into Cincinnati and beat them. That's a big boy win. Houston, a big boy team.
Yes, absolutely. Big boy win, 100%. Love the way that was said. And yeah, like this is CJ Stroud without his best receiver, because Nico Collins is the best receiver on that team.
For sure.
To me, there's no question about it. Like Tank Dell's a really good player. He's definitely their most explosive, like fast receiver is Tank Dell. But I think Nico's the best receiver. He's the X receiver. That was what was really interesting to me is like, and I didn't watch the whole 22 of this game or like see where everybody's lined up or anything. But to me, it's like Nico has a very singular role on that team as the X receiver. I was really curious going into it, like where does everybody else line up? Because Noah Brown had primarily been a slot guy. Robert Woods had primarily been a slot guy. Woods only catches 1 for 15 here. He had 3 targets. He had one touchdown called back on an illegal touch type of situation. So there was even some more meat called back for CJ Stroud here. So
that was a sick throw, by the way. Yes. As you said, the play didn't count. But that was one of the best throws I saw all Sunday, was that touchdown to Woods that unfortunately Woods had stepped out of the end zone. He did the Orlovsky. But C.J. Stroud, man, it could be so hard in college with the court. And look, we know in the next draft is going to be quarterback heavy. And it can be so hard when you have a player like Stroud who's surrounded by so much skill talent. How much of it is him? How much of it is the receivers? How much of it is the infrastructure in Ohio State? We talk about Brian Hartline, the former NFL player who's doing a great job coaching up that room. But this is C.J. Stroud. At this point, I'd be shocked if you know, 5 years from now, C.J. Stroud wasn't like one of the signature players of the league, wasn't a star. I mean, I think Houston has, barring injury, they've solved their quarterback room for the next 10 years.
Oh, 100%. And, you know, the mark of a great quarterback, the mark of a quarterback who belongs in the MVP conversation, as we are saying that C.J. Stroud officially does after today, is that they are talent elevators. You take away your best receiver in Nico Collins, and Noah Brown goes for 172. You know, Dalton Schultz, like, no fantasy analyst seems to like want to hype up Dalton Schultz, but he's been extremely usable at a rough position because C.J. Stroud is this guy. You know, we're going to talk about the Colts and Patriots game much later in the show. We'll see if we even spend more than 3 minutes on.
We should skip that game and dare the listeners to notice if we skipped it, because I don't know if anybody would complain. I don't know if anybody would be like, I really need to know what's going on with the Patriots backfield. I think people would be okay with that.
They very well may never notice, but listen, from an integrity perspective, we're going to talk about it even if it's for 30 seconds. Yeah,
for
now,
sure.
My point in bringing that game up is that, like, I had that game on in my garage because I was trying to get a quick little lift in before all the games kicked off. And so that game ends, and then it's still on the background of the TV or whatever. And, you know, the pregame shows are hyping up this matchup, talking about, you know, this is, I think when the Bengals look across the other sideline, they're going to see themselves from 4 years ago, you know, upstart rookie Ohio State quarterback, you know, but the Bengals are going to remind them, like, you're not there yet. Like, we are the Bengals of right now. You're the Bengals of 4 years ago, which, hey, that's what most of us thought was going to happen. Most people probably predicted that the Bengals were going to win this game. So I'm not calling out those analysts or anything, but the fact that then the Bengals, with that being the tenor of it, go on and beat, or they go on to lose to themselves of 4 years ago, that shows that the Texans are even farther ahead in their development than we could have possibly imagined, which is a credit to what C.J. Stroud is doing. It is a credit to what D'Amico Ryans has done. It's a credit to Nick Caserio, a guy who's gotten buried a lot as a GM, the team he has drafted here. Before we move off the Texans, just real quick, Devin Singletary, 30 carries, 150 yards, and a touchdown. Any sort of like fantasy takeaway there for the best rushing game the Texans have had by a long shot so far this season?
I just wish it hadn't come up after a game where he went absolutely nowhere the previous week. Grant, Tampa Bay does stop the run better than they defend the pass, but he did nothing there. At least it will put him, I would think, even when everybody's healthy and Pierce is ready to come back, that Singletary would still be the first chair and would have the starting opportunity. Probably, we always talk about, as I always talk about, double-digit touches projectable for fantasy. That's what makes somebody relevant. And although some people did ask me for Singletary today, and I'm sure I backed off, I did not give Singletary endorsements. I feel bad about that because he obviously had a blow-up game, but he will be a low-end running back two or a high-end running back three through the rest of the bye season. And I hope when you're in the fantasy playoff, you have better running backs than Devin Singletary. I think this is more a blip. I think this is more noise than signal, but he'll be playable. There's some really ugly bye weeks coming. There's a six-pack coming later in the next few weeks. So Singletary, I think, will be useful for maybe another month or so. I hope when you're in the fantasy playoffs, you're doing better at running back.
I totally agree with that. Anything on the Bengals before we leave? You know, Ja'Marr Chase reminds you why you can't sit a guy like this, because it only takes one play to really make the entire day. Tyler Boyd has 117 yards. Trenton Irwin gets in the end zone with T. Higgins out. Anything on the Bengals here?
I don't know what to do with Boyd, because I think we talked in the preview show. Yeah. I talked anyway about not trusting Boyd, where he'd had good spots. It was trending all week that Higgins wouldn't play. He doesn't play. And I had been burned trusting Boyd in that spot. And I just didn't trust him here. And he blows up for 8 for 117. And he should have caught a touchdown late in the game that would have secured the game for the Bengals. So he could have even had a better day than that. Also, Trenton Irwin, I had a prop on him. He catches the early touchdown and he was still like a yard and a half under the prop. And then I spent the whole afternoon thinking, am I really going to lose? Is he not going to catch another pass? But he got another one. He only targeted four times. But some people, you know, whatever. If you get 54 yards and a touchdown out of a long shot like Trenton Irwin, or you propped him like I did, you'll take it. It wasn't a great mixing game, but at least nobody else touches the ball here. And I realize their backfield has some injuries right now, but even when it's healthy, it's the Joe Mixon show. He's just being propped up by being the only guy in town on a plus offense, which makes him lower end running back one, a higher end running back two, but somebody most teams would probably start automatically, unless you were loaded in the running back. And if you are, we don't want to hear your problems. And Burrow, again, we've talked a lot in the last few weeks about how he's healthy again. He's proactively running again. He had a couple of uncharacteristic picks, but for the most part, I mean, 347, he gets 8.7 per attempt. Joe Burrow is back to being the guy we thought he was. And, you know, Chase, as you said, I don't believe in playing for friendliest loss. I don't think you should make decisions based on what you can live with afterwards. But one thing I would do is that when a guy like Jamar Chase is going to play, knowing that it could blow up, he could play 15 snaps, he could play 20 snaps, he could be a decoy, but he's just too good. Today, he's not 100%, and he still throws up a top 10 game. It's just when a player like Jamar Chase is in a very small – when they say always start your studs, I agree with that, except that I think the stud category is extremely small, that room, but Jamar Chase is certainly in it.
Yeah, that's perfectly said. All right, let's move on. Stay in the AFC North, though. Browns 33, Ravens 31. Man, I mean, for a while, it looked like the Ravens were going to cruise to a win over the Cleveland Browns. The win probability on our site, at least here, has just in the box, in the game log box score, whatever you want to call it. Fourth quarter, a minute and 24 seconds left. Baltimore's got a 70% win probability. Cleveland Browns ended up winning this game on the last drive. And, you know, we can talk about the Ravens in a second, but sticking on the Browns, you know, look, they're not the most fun team to talk about in the world, but Deshaun Watson, you know, ends up kind of getting them into position to win this game. Amari Cooper has 98 yards against a really tough defense. Jerome Ford has 100 yards against a really tough defense. He is a really fun player, I think, and has some staying power with the Cleveland Browns, depending on what happens with Nick Chubb. Elijah Moore gets in the end zone. David Njoku continues to kind of thrive in this run after catch role. I'll ask you, Scott, is the Browns offense sort of kind of finding something here?
I don't know what to make of this game, because after the first quarter, I thought Baltimore was going to win 50-3.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, Cleveland's in this game. Cleveland might cover. Oh, Watson made a couple. I think Watson started 1-for-9 in this game or something like that. And part rough. Of it is just
PJ Walker got in there because he was a little banged up as well.
For sure. The Baltimore defense, of course, is generally very good. It wasn't good today, although they did sack Watson four times. And you know, Watson's just going to have negative plays, right? I mean, he put the ball on the ground once. They got it back. He threw a pick. He took sacks. So I don't know what to make of it. Baltimore also had a very low snap count in this game, in part because they had a couple of blow-up plays. Just, I got a lot of Keaton Mitchell questions, and I generally said you couldn't play him. He did really well on four touches. I don't know how to even unpack that. We'll get to the Ravens in a second. You know, I'd like to say, Matt, after the Browns get the signature win, there's no team the Browns want to beat more than the Ravens, I think. You know, the team that stole their franchise, right? I still don't know that I can trust Watson. I still don't know that I can trust Elijah Moore, who had a decent game with a touchdown. I still don't feel like Njoku is in the top 10 at tight end. I feel like Cooper is one of those lower end wide receiver two, higher end wide receiver threes that you play, but you don't really want to watch them. And you know, at any point it can go south. I still think the idea to trade a ton of draft capital and give out a monster contract to Deshaun Watson was a comical mistake. But somehow they stole this game. I don't know, 6.3 yards per attempt. I know Baltimore's defense is good. I feel like Ford could go back to being irrelevant for the next 3 or 4 weeks. I want to say nice things about the Browns, but I can't believe they won this game. And I still don't really know what is the foundation. What is the repeatable, successful foundation of this offense? Because I don't see it.
That last point, I think I agree with that. I still think they're trying to find their identity. I think Watson kind of constantly being off and on the field, and it was coming at a really inconvenient time earlier. Like, I maintain that him getting injured right after, like, Nick Chubb had gotten injured, when they were sort of transitioning away from the Nick Chubb run heavy play action to tight end offense to more of a spread offense under the gun, like in the gun, all that stuff with Deshaun probably threw off the progress and everything here. But I think I'm a little more optimistic than you are that it can come together here, especially because this was a really tough matchup. And Watson, look, put him in a hole right away. His pick to Kyle Hamilton, the pick six to start the game off, was disgusting, was horrific. I mean, it's one of the worst throws that you could ever make. But then at the end of the day, too, like, the thing with the Browns is that their defense, as much as we have gushed and rightly so have gushed about the Ravens defense of late, the Browns defense is one of the stories of the season here. Like how that them being that good. And when you have a defense like that, you can have some margin for error with your offense to come back in this game, because Lamar Jackson threw a couple passes you just absolutely can't throw, right? Like, especially late in a game like that, you know, a pick six on his behalf as well. So yeah, the Ravens box score looks weird because Lamar only has 23 attempts. He only completed 13 of them. No running back has more than 11 carries. It's Gus Edwards. Like you said, Keaton Mitchell does his best. Like I called him Bud Light Devon Achane. I mean, that he did that sort of impression on this one here. So they're a weird team just box score wise coming out because they ran so few plays because they had big plays. Odell Beckham scores on a 40-yard touchdown. Keaton Mitchell has big plays. And then they gave away possessions as well at the end of the game as well, too.
And we're going to get a good look at the Ravens because they play Thursday night against the Bengals. And then they get the Sunday night game at the Chargers the following week. What do you tell people with Mitchell, right? It's interesting. Yeah. He was added in a lot of Yahoo leagues, but he was still under 50% when the week started. And because he was on the injury report, we weren't sure if he was going to play. And it's always going to be crowded here because Jackson's going to run some and Gus Edwards is going to have goal line equity. And they do dress Justice Hill on game day and he may get a couple of touches just to get in the way. So it's you're divvying up a pie that's already got pieces taken away. I want to say something else. So I don't know what this – I think Mitchell, I still – as exciting as he is – I think he can only be the Sigmund Bloom what the heck flex right now. Somebody who you could play who has an upside knowing you could get a zero because yeah. There's no floor for opportunity yet until we see them step in and say, okay, he's an 8 to 12 touch guy. I don't know why he wouldn't have been. His successful plays, his long touchdown run and his long reception were early in this game. I didn't hear of an injury. I know he was on the injury report, so maybe he did tweak something. But when somebody's that successful, why isn't he playing more? There's mysteries to be solved with Keith Mitchell. I do not have the answer. I want to see something else. Look, Lamar Jackson's a very talented player, and we know he went through that crazy offseason. Where is he going to play? Does anybody want to trade for him? And finally, the Ravens ponied up, paid him, and I certainly think that was the right thing. But stop it with this Lamar Jackson MVP stuff. I don't see it. He's having an okay season. I don't think he's anywhere near an MVP level, and that's kind of the story with a lot of these signature quarterbacks. It's not a signature. It's not a salad season for Mahomes. Josh Allen's throwing a lot of picks. Hurts may be playing hurt right now. Of course, he's on his bye week. But Tua, I don't think Tua can win the MVP because Tyreek Hill is going to take too much attention. But Lamar Jackson, to me, is just a guy having a season. He's been okay. And the Ravens were kind of the hot, trendy, look, Baltimore's the best team in football. Well, how come nobody says that? And then everybody said it this week and they lose to Cleveland, yeah. No less. A Cleveland team that's full of flaws, albeit they have the great defense. I don't know. The Ravens are – this is a theme for fantasy this year. They're a team where I see all this talent, and I feel like I should be getting more fantasy juice out of the Ravens than I am.
The problem with Lamar is that he had 10 fumbles coming into this game, and then yeah. He has two picks that – one of which basically brought the Browns back into the game. So I understand why people were putting him in the MVP conversation coming into this game, but he's a big reason why they lost this one. So I don't think he can really rightly be coming out of this performance. And
I'm so glad you mentioned the fumbles, by the way. Pardon me for 1 second. Other than Daniel Jones, I can't think of a quarterback who's been taken to task or lambasted for fumble. A fumble is just as bad as an interception. In fact, it's probably going to set you up with worse field position. And usually on those strip sacks, the quarterback's getting hit. A lot of bad things happen when you fumble, and you need to protect the ball. This is an ongoing problem with Jackson that he needs to clean up.
Let's move on here. Lions 41, Chargers 38. What a masterclass performance from the Detroit Lions. 41 total points, as I mentioned. Amon-Ra St. Brown goes absolutely berserk. 8 catches for 156 yards and a touchdown on 9 targets. And both running backs go off here, which is critical. I should mention, too, Amon-Ra St. Brown also has 9 rushing yards. Both of these running backs go off. Dan Campbell made the Alvin Kamara, Mark Ingram 2017 comparison with these guys, and he's not the first person to make that comparison. A lot of people have insinuated that was the plan with these two running backs. Now that Gibbs has developed, and now that Montgomery is back and healthy, I think you're going to see plenty of performances with these two running backs, Scott, where they're both perfectly acceptable fantasy starters and no more complaining about it either.
The Lions are a very tidy fantasy team. Isn't it interesting that they switch roles today where Montgomery had the long touchdown and Gibbs was punching it in from short yardage? And this was also the fourth down ball. It feels like there was like 20 fourth down plays in this game, and almost every one of them was a conversion. But the Lions are super tidy for fantasy because they have great offensive line, great offensive coordinator. Jared Goff is a plus quarterback. He's not going to run, so he won't get Montgomery's way or Gibbs' way. And you know who's getting targeted off the bus. St. Brown was terrific today. As you said, they did give him a couple of runs as well. It wasn't the biggest Laporta game, although he had maybe the biggest catch of the game that extended that final drive. Pretty gutsy going for it on fourth down, but you know Dan Campbell, he plays with his hair on fire.
4 of 5. Lions were 4 of 5 on fourth down, and the Chargers were 3 of 3. So good call by you. Yes, this was a very fourth down heavy
game. It was the fourth down ball for sure. And although one goal line possession is a little frustrating to watch the Lions have to play defense 8 straight plays because I thought the penalty on one of the fourth downs was a little bit ticky-tack. But
yeah,
to me, the key with the Lions is just don't talk yourself into their support receivers, whether it's Josh Reynolds or Khalif Raymond or Jameson Williams or eventually DPJ will get in the mix. It's about their main dudes. It's about St. Brown. It's about Laporta. It's about the two running backs. And it's about Goff. And everybody else supports the offense's efficiency, but isn't going to be fantasy viable. But 7-2, man, there's a very realistic path that they could be the 1 or 2 seed, maybe the 1 seed in the NFC. Disappointed the Lions defense didn't play better today, but this offense, it's fun to watch. Ben Johnson calls cool plays. You know, they call a lot of plays that win by design, and guys are wide open. They scheme guys open. They're one of my first rewatches every week because there's enough bad football out there. You know, I can only watch the Jaguars not complete passes to Calvin Ridley for so long before I need to cleanse my palate, and the Lions are a team that can cleanse my palate.
Where are the Chargers on the palate cleansing spectrum? This is a very Chargers-ish game. They lose at the end. Justin Herbert throws 4 touchdowns. You can nitpick some stuff, but overall, I think he played really well. Eckler touches the ball 23 times, goes over 100 yards, scores a touchdown. He could have gotten in on a second one, but was stuffed at the goal line. Keenan Allen goes off, but I remain very concerned about that second receiver position where Jalen Guyton and Quentin Johnson find the end zone, but both of them left a ton of plays on the field as well. I still feel like they're playing a man down on offense there.
Yeah, Johnson scored a touchdown and acted like they won the Super Bowl, but what a game from Keenan Allen, man. Allen, who hurt his shoulder in this game, goes to the locker room, not sure if he's going to come back, and then he ends up scoring the game-tying touchdown on a beautiful, I'm not sure if it was an ad-lib play of him and Herbert did a check with me at the line, but it wasn't the greatest defended play, but Keenan Allen was just fantastic today. In a day where we had a lot of blowout performances, he was one of them. I wonder if he can do this for a couple more years. I don't think he's a Hall of Famer, but I think he's going to retire with really the best collection of stats for like people who aren't in the Hall of Fame. He's going to be on that short list.
Because probably needs a playoff moment or two, you know?
There you go. Does Mike Evans really have that? I guess they did win the one title with Brady, but I feel like Mike Evans is already in the Hall of Fame. I also feel like Mike Evans is a better player than Keenan Allen, but because what Keenan Allen does is a lot of chain moving, he did make a couple of downfield plays today, of course, to get the 175, but I feel like he's always been a little bit underrated. And we talked a couple of weeks ago about being a season of the old guy or the at least advancing age player. And I feel like Keenan Allen, I was trying to be a year early on this, and I didn't draft proactively into him. Now, granted, we didn't know Mike Williams was going to get hurt. That has hurt the offense. It was nice to see the Chargers, who they really haven't been able to get out of their own way since Williams got hurt. This was a blow-up game for them. They needed it. Shame Eckler maybe left another touchdown on the field. I'd like to see a little bit more creative play design by Kellen Moore at the goal line, too. I think they're a little bit too predictable. I feel like I know their plays. For a team that moved the ball really easily between the 20s, I know they've actually had really good goal line efficiency. Maybe I'm just thinking about that 8-play sequence, which felt like they were never going to score. But the Chargers, the defense didn't show up, whatever. But Herbert was really good. Allen was really good. I'm going to need to see Guyton or Johnson do it again. And not only that, get a bigger target share. I mean, when Herbert throws 40 passes and you're only getting 4 to 6 targets, that just isn't fantasy playable. Right now, the Chargers are a 3-headed monster.
All right, next game up here, Vikings 27, Saints 19. Two quarterback heavy storylines here. Josh Dobbs does it again. We see Jameis Winston on the other side there for the New Orleans Saints. Which one do you want to start with?
Let's start with the Saints. Because when Carr got hurt, I posited on Twitter, well, Carr really hasn't been good for a year and a half. How worse could they be with Winston? And Winston averages 4.9 yards per attempt. Look, it's unfair to come down too hard on any quarterback who plays in the middle of a game. You did not expect it to. You didn't take all the reps. He does throw through touchdowns because he got ridiculous touchdown catches from Chris Olave, maybe the catch of the year. And then A.T. Perry made an unbelievable catch, too. These were classic Winston YOLO balls that he got bailed out.
Especially the A.T. Perry one.
For sure. But then again, that's kind of what we want with James Winston, right? It's been such a frustrating Chris Olave season that Chris Olave managers were probably like anything but Derek Carr. I don't care. James Winston, fine. I'll take anybody. Drew Brees wants to make a comeback. If Billy Joe Horbert is in the area, you know, just give me somebody. Ken Stabler, I guess, is no longer with us. But give me, I'm trying to think of other Saint quarterbacks. Jim Everett was on the Saints for a minute. But
Aaron Brooks.
Aaron Brooks is the guy I was trying to think of. I was like, who wish to wear number two for the Saints? Yeah, Aaron Brooks, the great Aaron, who had a lot of James Winston in him. Aaron Brooks would keep both teams in the game. I'm afraid, this is more of a gut feel thing, but I'm afraid that Winston, if he plays, is bad for, I think it might end Taysom Hill. I don't think, I just see there's a conflict there. I think they're fine taking Carr off the field. I don't. Hill had a quiet game. Kamara didn't do a lot. He got a lot of opportunity, but you know, 16 touches, he gets 75 yards at least in PPR. The 7 for 33 bails you out, but he wasn't efficient here. The Saints made this game cosmetically close for the most part. They got their ass kicked for about 2 hours, and then Jameis YOLO kind of brought them back. I don't know. What's your level of trust with Michael Thomas? Might as well have retired. 2 targets, 1 for 9. I don't think anybody can play him anymore. Do you feel good about any of the Saints right now?
Yeah, right. Like, because the Saints offense has been one of my least favorite to watch and like least favorite to discuss this year, because mm-hmm. there's just a lot of bad ball going on there. Part of which, though, is the quarterback. I think Derek Carr has played poorly this year. I think he has been so quick to check down that it's like ruined plays and clearly frustrated the pass catchers. Like, you can't watch a Saints game, especially on film, and like see these guys like throwing their hands up when Derek Carr is like checking down to Alvin Kamara without even them, these guys like getting out of their routes. So there's clear, it's not a very fun offense. So I think it's natural for me to sit here and be like, all right, I want to see somebody else captain this offense, especially when the guy Jameis Winston behind him is a verifiable fire show, right? And he did exactly what I expected Jameis Winston to do, which is to pump pass catchers with production. Adam Harstead of Football Guys had this. Chris Olave with Derek Carr, 1 target for 15 yards mm-hmm. for 37 minutes of game time. Chris Olave with Jameis Winston, 9 targets, 7 for 79. That beautiful touchdown you mentioned in 20 minutes. And plus, he had a 24-yarder called back due to penalty, did Chris Olave. The A.T. Perry catch, which A.T. Perry came into the game when Michael Thomas got injured early, was out for the game pretty quickly. A.T. Perry is a really intriguing X receiver prospect. So I'm interested to see if Perry can continue to get some game time here. But that's I love Jameis for that. But coaches hate Jameis for the 2 interceptions that he threw, which were needless. They were arm punts, basically. And like the second one, especially, it's like, yo, you didn't need to do that there. You did not need to force that ball to Rashid Shaheed down the field, like when you're trying to come back and win this game. Derek Carr, it sounds like he's going to try to come back after the bye, which is next week for the Saints. So it's good timing. Ian Rapoport reported that he wants to get back after there. And that does seem like Derek Carr. He's kind of that guy that's going to come back early, whatever. But I don't think that coaches want to do the, especially this Saints coaching staff wants to do the live by the sword, die by the sword stuff that Jameis brings you.
No, I think they view him just as a backup. They're not going to proactively go to Winston. Although, as you said, and as Adam pointed out, it did pump life into Olave. Let me ask you this. I'll make you czar of all things NFL. Somebody has to win the NFC South. I'm going to say, Matt Harmon, you just pick the team that you either think will be the most competitive in the playoffs or the most watchable. You will pick the NFC South champion. It will not be determined on the field. And you're not allowed to pick the Panthers for like as a gag or anything. You have to pick the Saints, the Buccaneers, or the Falcons. Who would you want to see in the NFC playoffs as the NFC South champion?
Dude, I don't want to watch any of these teams anymore. Yeah, and as producer
you
know Collins,
what? I'll give you probably an answer. I'll give you an answer. Arthur Smith is out because he's just going to drive us
obviously,
crazy.
Obviously, yeah, obviously.
And I think the Saints are. I think Tampa Bay at least. Look, Baker at least. He leaves it all on the field, man. That guy cares so much. And, you know, Mike Evans going to the Hall of Fame. Chris Godwin's still a baller. The Bucks, the Bucks are only getting this nod because of the people who are around them, but I would give a very weak nod to Tampa Bay.
Yeah, as Producer Collins pointed out in the chat, this team, whoever it is probably going to Dallas. So, like, do I really which quarterback do I want to see sacrifice to the Cowboys and Micah Parsons?
Oh, they're hosting. They're hosting Dallas. Yeah, but they're getting Dallas, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And Dallas will be favored by 9.5 points and probably be trailing at halftime and driving all the Cowboy fans crazy. Well, let's talk about the happy
stuff. Yeah, let's please talk about the Vikings.
Joshua Dobbs, this was a fascinating game because he goes off last week. You know, he with the team for 10 minutes, passed the play with an injury, bails the game out. A lot of it was street yard. The passing wasn't that efficient. He did a lot of plays with his legs. Just miraculous he could play and not throw up all over himself based on what he was asked to do last week. Mm-hmm. So you think, well, what's he going to do the next week? Now, on one hand, he gets to take the reps and everything. He gets to learn names of teammates, cadences and all that. But then the other team gets some tape on him. He won't sneak up on anybody. And I thought he was really good. And we talked about hurt guys, right? T.J. Hockenson, injury report all week. He's had the rib problem for a while. A lot of people weren't sure. A lot of people had really good alternatives. I was asked a ton of Hockenson questions today, and I know some of them I said Hockenson, but some of them I said Dalton Kincaid, or some of them I might have said Evan Engram, which I hate myself if I did that. But I know a couple times I did say to bench Hockenson, and then he, in the first half, I think he had 10 catches and a touchdown. He's over 100 yards. He wasn't used much in the second half, but he was fantastic. You know, I was talking about Dobbs. I kind of dinged the Browns a little bit for giving up on Dobbs. And some people were pointing out, well, the entire NFL could have had him. They didn't want him. I hold it against the Browns because they had him in the room. If Dobbs had anything special about him, they should have known it because they had a chance to work this guy out, see him practice, and get to know what kind of person he was and everything. But then again, that Dobbs story comes out of nowhere. It's not that anybody could really expect it. And I've been having fun with that Dobbs, Trevor Lawrence stat, where Dobbs has now had 5 games over 20 fantasy points this year, and Trevor Lawrence doesn't have any. The great thing about Dobbs is that even when he has lesser passing games, he's always going to run. He 8 for 44 and a touchdown today. He's getting Jefferson back probably next week. Jordan Addison has been pretty good for a rookie. Hockenson is a very active tight end. I know their running game is never anything to speak of, and the running back struggled today to get anything going, although Ty Chandler did score a touchdown. But I would be, if my running back room was a shipwreck, I'd be fine, or Superflex or something, or DFS, or I'm fine. Joshua Dobbs is fine. He's athletic, he's competitive, and he can make plays in and out of structure, maybe more out of structure than in structure. And we'll see how teams react to him later in the year, but I'm here. I'm here for the Joshua Dobbs moment.
It's one of the most exciting stories of the season, and I'm here for it as well. Next game up here, Steelers 23, Packers 19. Scott did not want me to have this in the headliners here. He thought I could move it to the rest section. But listen, I think there's a couple fascinating things to talk about here. Number one, Steelers run game is alive, Scott. 15 carries for 101 yards and a touchdown for Jalen Warren. 16 for 82 and a touch for Najee Harris, who, as I whispered on the last podcast, is kind of looking kind of good. Like he looks kind of good.
It's the poor man's Montgomery and Gibbs, right?
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
Oh, Pittsburgh, man. Outgained for the 9th straight week, and they're 6-3.
It's beautiful.
Has Mike Tomlin ever won Coach of the Year?
No, he's never won Coach of the Year. Well, which
maybe he should some year. I don't know. Just a thought.
They need to just get him one just because it's like the right thing to do. He handled the George Pickens, who leads the team in receiving with 45 friggin' yards. Remember what the Jets are, who are playing on Sunday Night Football. Remember the whole like Elijah Moore goes on a tweet storm and then like gets in fight, like, this huge blowout with the team, and then he's on another team in his second season. I'm not saying that like Elijah Moore is as good as George Pickens or anything like that, but I think Elijah Moore's a good quality receiver. Mike Tomlin just is like, yeah, it's not a big deal to me. They didn't let him run out with the starters on the first play, but it doesn't really matter. He still ends up playing like his normal role. And like, that's how a good coach handles the classic as ever annual thing that happens now, Scott. A second year receiver gets into some sort of beef with the team every year. It's a trend. Mike Tomlin handles that beautifully. They've got like a identity sort of thing here. If this run game continues to pop up, the defense is what it is. I don't know, man. I mean, look, the Steelers are just, they are what they are, but you got to respect them for being what they are.
And Tomlin, he's dealt with some, shall we say, mercurial receivers in the past, Antonio Brown being the best, but not the only example. If the Steelers are going, if this is going to be their identity, we win ugly, we win on defense, we win giving both. I mean, today Warren had 17 touches and Harris had 19. that really puts a pin in the passing game. We already kind of feel like Kenny Pickett is capped at one touchdown a week. He didn't even get that this week. Johnson, who's generally their target hog, only had 4 today. Even with the idea to get Pickens back and, you know, in good graces, he only goes 3 for 45 on 4 targets. That doesn't get home. Somebody got mad at me. They asked me Deontay Johnson or Hollywood Brown, who should I start? Johnson has the quiet 1 for 17. The guy's all over me, and then, you know, 4 targets. And then Hollywood Brown had 1 for 28, I think, on 4 targets. So I apologize. I'm sure that 1.1 points that I cost you on your Johnson versus Hollywood Brown call, it's, you know, I hope that didn't. My advice would be to draft a better team so I can pick between 2 better players. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. I'm afraid. I know you're a long carrying Deontay Johnson fan, and I am too. Maybe not to your level, but he's a really good player and he's a target earner. And his target share will go up. That's a fluke.
Yeah,
I'm a Pickens fan too. But whatever pie they're splitting up, it's that like gas station pie. It's not the pie totally. You bring home to Thanksgiving. There's not a lot to divvy up here. There's just, and eventually they'll get Freiermuth back, I would think. This passing game is just, it's shipwrecked at the moment. I think you have to play at this point. I think you have to play Johnson or Pickens only in a pinch. I don't think you can play them at all proactively.
I think that might be a little harsh for me, just because we've seen Johnson have good games. We've seen Pickens even have like one.
You've had good gas station pie. Is that what you're trying to say? You've had.
Yeah. Like you will stumble onto a good gas station pie, but your point is still right. That like, even when you get a game where one of these guys goes off, the other ceiling is probably like 70 yards. These two guys are good enough that like, the Titans game, perfect example where George Pickens didn't even get close to 70 yards, right? He had negative yardage, but that's the type of thing that you can deal with this pass game, that even when they win and the passing game has a solid night, like they did on Thursday night last week, both of these receivers, there's like a 0% chance they can both have a big game together. So then you're sort of kind of guessing which one ends up having the moment. I think Johnson will have more of those games than Pickens will, just because the type of player these two guys are, but it is still, you are definitely splitting a pie that is very, very small or very unappealing from the gas.
Well, let's carry that theme. Talk about guessing on receivers and splitting an unappealing pie. Break down the Green Bay receiver room for me right now, because Christian Watson was the guy everybody drafted. He does nothing on 7 targets today, 2 for 23. Jaden Reed's actually looked pretty good. He only got 5 targets today. I'd like to see more of that. 5 for 84 and a touchdown. Yes. Romeo Doubs. So I know at least one person wanted me to co-sign Doubs. I couldn't do it. He does get a touchdown, but it's only 3 for 31. It was a really quiet Aaron Jones game after he got going the previous week. I know Love threw the horrible pick at the end. I thought actually Love played better than I expected, but I had such limited expectations coming in that maybe that doesn't mean a lot. Give me the Matt Harmon going forward plan with this receiver room.
Yeah, I think it's a problem. And I think their problems start with Christian Watson. I posited on Twitter on Sunday, has anything good happened on a Christian Watson contested target at all this year? Jordan Love's first interception was a contested catch that you'd like to see Watson put up a bigger fight on, which has been the theme really of the season. Again, which is my point here. It feels like anytime Love targets Christian Watson in contested situations, nothing good happens. And this is a guy that's supposed to be a big, fast, you know, physical specimen of a receiver, but he comes up so small in those situations. The game ending interception was also a target to Christian Watson where he got pushed around. I wrote in my Care Don't Care recap article that I do not care about Christian Watson's rookie year yards per route run. And this made, I mean, buddy, it made the rounds in the offseason. This is a tweet in January from JJ Zacharyson. Top 7 rookie wide receiver yards per route run leaders, minimum 50 targets since 2011. 1, Odell Beckham, AJ Brown, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, Chris Olave, Tyreek Hill, and Christian Watson. Number 7. And this is not like hindsight analysis, because I would have said this in the offseason. There is one screaming outlier on that list, and it's Christian Watson. Here's their reception perception success rate versus man coverage scores, those 7 guys as rookies. Tyreek Hill, 72.4%. Chris Olave, 75.8%. Odell Beckham, 80.1%. Still one of the highest in RP history, Odell Beckham's rookie season. AJ Brown, 73.9%. Justin Jefferson, 76.4%. Jamar Chase, 75.3%. The average there is 75.7%. Christian Watson, 64.4%. That was a lot of like big play boosted Aaron Rodgers efficiency stuff, a Hall of Fame quarterback that was playing probably over aggressive, rebelling against the offense and flinging it downfield to Christian Watson. that Jordan Love was just never going to do. Like, I'm not saying that Christian Watson's letdown season is all Christian Watson's fault, but the Packers could get away, Scott, with playing a rookie receiver in Jaden Reed, another rookie receiver in Dontavian Wicks. I kind of like Dontavian Wicks a little bit. There's another second-year receiver in Romeo Doubs and a rookie tight end in Luke Musgrave if they had a true number one receiver, which is what all those other six guys went on to be like right away. Christian Watson's just not that guy. And I think it's a big problem and it's a big reason why this offense is struggling like it is.
I'm trying to think if anybody's receiver room is this young. Does anybody shave on this team?
No.
It's amazing. What they could really use is somebody like a 4 or 5 year vet who's been around, who could be that base player, that tempo setter, and they don't really have it. Maybe they were hoping that that Aaron Jones could be that guy. He's been hurt most of the year and doesn't do much today. Does the quiet game for Jones, does that shake your confidence in him or just write it off to the Steelers being pretty good?
Steelers are good. I think my confidence is a little shaken. He's so important to what they do, which is, again, ironic because they made him take a pay cut. But he's so important to what they do, but he's still a running back on a bad offense, which always spooks me.
For sure.
All right, last game in our headliner section here. Washington Commanders 26, Seattle Seahawks 29. Seahawks get one of the many last-minute victory field goals here. This game for a second looked like we were going to have to be talking about the Seahawks offense and a disappointment in a great spot, but DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett both go over 90 yards. JSN has, 4 for 53. Geno, 369 passing yards, 2 touchdowns. It was an easy layup spot, and Geno hit the layup.
Yeah, everybody got home in this game except for if you needed Jahan Dotson, who only got 2 targets and didn't have a catch. I guess McLaurin was quiet too on 8 targets, but
a lot of dudes they threw the football to a lot of dudes
phone booked
again.
It. Washington phone booked it. And if you had told me, Matt, if I had skipped this game and you had said, "Hey, guess who went 6 for 119 and a touchdown for Washington?" I would have guessed retired players. I would have guessed Art Monk before Brian Robinson Jr., who
Santana
catches
Santana Moss, Randall
right,
L.
Yes. Right, for sure. For sure. Michael Westbrook probably would have come out with a Westbrook. I wouldn't have come up with Brian. I didn't say, "Oh, no, it's a running back." Oh, okay. It's
Pierre Garçon, he get in the mix.
Pierre Garçon was really good for a while.
He was
had
really
some nice
good.
Time in Indianapolis too. But Robinson is the guy who gets the long touchdown catch and got 6 targets and 6 catches. This must be the best receiving game of his career. I was also surprised, maybe encouraged, that Zach Charbonnet got involved as much as he did for Seattle. He had 10 opportunities, 6 runs for 44 yards. He had 4 catches, didn't go very far, but he was targeted 5 times. We know they generally don't, ironically enough, it's Walker. That's the other thing too. What 2 players are going to catch the long touchdowns in this game? Well, of course, it's Brian Robinson, who they don't throw to, and Kenneth Walker, who isn't the preferred back that Seattle throws to. It's not DK Metcalf, it's not Terry McLaurin, it's not the comeback in Jahan Dotson. So this game was a little bit of a tease. It was 9-9 at halftime. They get to 55 points. Both quarterbacks go over 300. It's just the stuff didn't go to the guys we really wanted. I mean, Metcalf did enough late, 7 for 98 in a touchdown. That's fine. Tyler Lockett was over his projection, 8 for 92 in a touchdown. He actually came back after getting dinged up in this game, so good on him. I thought maybe there'd be a little bit more JSN in this game, but 4 for 53, based on what your expectations were, probably shouldn't have killed you. You know what, though? Geno, he did it against Washington, who has no pass rush. He was sacked once in this game against 47 pass attempts. Whenever Seattle plays a league average defense, let alone a good defense, I don't trust Geno anymore, and it's making me nervous. You probably have to play DK and Lockett wherever you do, and you probably drafted Walker to be a no-doubt starter. I think the Seahawks can score 13 points against any good team.
I'm with you. They hit the layup here, but I don't think that moves the needle in terms of, like, I had already sort of lowered my expectations for this unit. And I think if they had come back, if they'd come in here and like flamethrowed Washington from start to finish, I might've been willing to move my expectations back up. That didn't happen. So I'm kind of with you there. And yeah, I mean, the damn Commanders, dude, Devin Thomas and Malcolm Kelly could catch passes for this team, and I wouldn't be surprised because they just throw to so many dudes.
All right, I'll say this for Howell, though. He's competitive as hell, and he gets hit and he comes back, and they're not shy about throwing the ball. They're going to end up with probably the most pass attempts in the league. So it means I'm still going to rank McLaurin pretty optimistically next week, even though he didn't do it this week. And the spread of their targets is a little bit frustrating, and maybe this Robinson game just won't repeat, but Washington will give us more often than not. They'll give us carnival games. They'll be a good team for fantasy because they can keep up and they can't stop anybody.
Yeah, they play the Giants next week, so
if they can, puts a pin in that, but still.
Maybe not a carnival, maybe only a one-sided
you
carnival.
You want, on that let me look really quickly at what they have in the playoffs, because that's the team you want to attack. Okay, so the playoffs, they get fantasy playoffs, that is. They get the Rams, the Jets, and the 49ers. Congratulations, anybody who has 49ers in that game, because they're all going to score. Yeah. I know sometimes they cannibalize each other, but they're all scoring in that game.
Well, beautiful transition to the rest category, and we can go a little quicker on some of these because there are some real dogs in this one here. Starting with 49ers 34, Jacksonville Jaguars 3. Really concerning performance for the Jacksonville Jaguars. I mean, the 49ers, I don't even know how much time we need to spend on them. It was adorable that Kyle Shanahan tried to get Christian McCaffrey a touchdown when damn Sam Darnold was on the field. I mean, pretty funny stuff. That's about all I have to say about the 49ers. They are what they are, but the Jags, man, again, really concerning performance. They get outgained at home coming off their bye, 437 total yards to 221. Their first half drives go as follow. Three plays, punt. 6 plays, punt. 4 plays, fumble. 14 plays to a damn field goal, Scott. Their only points of the day. I'm going to try not to overreact to this performance because I think the 49ers are a really, really good team. And I do think Steve Wilks actually coming out of the booth onto the sideline makes a difference for this 49ers operation on defense. But like, I think this team will be fine. But I don't think fine is what we were promised with the Jacksonville Jaguars. From an NFL perspective, it's probably not good enough while CJ Stroud is playing as good as he is to just moonwalk to the damn AFC South title. And you know, fine is not going to be enough for a lot of these fantasy players to hit like we were expecting.
Right. And Houston already has a win in that that matchup. They're going to play again in 2 weeks. True. That'll be a really interesting game. I was prepared to bury the Jaguars passing game. And I want to say all these bad things about Calvin Ridley. The good thing he did do is draw a bunch of penalties today, but he only had 2 catches. But the schedule, the Titans next week, we know they're a classic funnel defense. They shut down the run. Everybody throws on them. And then they play the Texans, and they've been playing all these pinball games lately. The Bengals were in a shootout this week, and they're the game after that. Now, the 2 games after that, and looking too far ahead in the NFL can be a fool's errand. Sometimes you know, things change. But then they get the Browns and the Ravens, which is just, oh, man, a couple of wham blocks to the head. But Trevor Lawrence still doesn't have the 20-point game. Ridley's gone from, oh my God, he's a league winner, to wait a minute, maybe he's not their most reliable fantasy receiver, to can I even play Calvin Ridley? Now, you have to play him next week. It's the Titans. This is what they do.
Yeah.
But I can't think of a more frustrating team. Out of the bye, maybe it was a little bit of a setup game. They get the Niners on a 3-game bender. They're coming out of the bye too. They just upgraded their defense. So maybe the idea that the Niners would win this game or winning it convincingly wasn't too hard to get to, but 34-3 out of your bye week, you guys look like you could not be more disorganized, could not be more dysfunctional. And I'm taking all my Jaguars. I'm no longer looking at these guys other than Kirk and ETN. You write off the ETN game. Nobody else on this roster is an automatic fantasy start.
Yeah. I mean, prove me wrong. Go out and beat up on the Titans. I'd love to see it. But right now I am definitely concerned. All right. Next game up here. Oh, baby, we have finally arrived to the Atlanta Falcons. Cardinals 25, Falcons 23. Falcons are on the skid. But, hey, Kyler Murray comes back. He runs 6 times for 33 yards and a touchdown, which I saw plenty of people, you know, saying maybe he won't run as much. Clayton Toon gets in there for a 1-yard plunge when rookie Michael Wilson gets tackled at the 1-yard line. Trey McBride, the real big winner here from a fantasy perspective, 131 yards, 8 catches, 9 targets. But look, I think Murray wasn't perfect. He certainly wasn't flawless, but he got himself out of some pressures. He looked good overall to me. And I said coming into this that I was excited about Kyler Murray rest of the season. And today did nothing to temper that enthusiasm.
Yeah, I asked a lot of Kyler Murray questions today. And I think on every one of them, I said, I got to see a game. Everybody else had another alternative I thought was reasonable. And I actually think he played better than the game lined up for fantasy. He doesn't get a touchdown throw. He does get that 1 touchdown run. He ran more proactively than I remember. It was a big story, a big talking point before he got hurt last year that he didn't want to run anymore. And he had that unbelievable avoidance of a sack and turned it into a positive run late in this game that basically saved the game for the Cardinals. He played a lot better than I expected. Now, maybe I didn't have as high expectations on him as some other people did, but he played a lot better than I expected. And as you said, he took McBride along with him. Disappointing that Brown doesn't do anything in this game. Michael Wilson just missed a touchdown, but 3 for 34 isn't going to do it. Connor gets 16 carries, no targets. He wasn't involved in the passing game. But the bottom line is this. Kyler Murray is the story of the Cardinals offense, and I give him like a B for this game, maybe even a B plus. I thought, again, I'm impressed and encouraged, and it's going to make Connor and McBride going forward, I think, playable guys. And if maybe Brown and Murray, who have a history, of course, maybe they can eventually get Brown going. You might need a prove it game from Brown, but this came out, Arizona came out better than I expected. Now, I thought Taylor Heinicke, I don't want to bash a guy who gets hurt, but he played so poorly that I was actually excited to see Desmond Ridder play again.
Yeah.
And, you know, Ridder didn't play all that much, but I have nothing new on the Falcons. At least they gave Bijan Robinson something to do. 23 touches. He even was a punt return man of all things. Was that Arthur Smith just flipping off the fantasy community? You want him to touch the ball, he'll touch it on this punt return. But we've seen this Drake London story before. We've seen this Kyle Pitts story before. The Falcons remain one of the most frustrating teams in fantasy.
Yeah, I bet they go back to Ridder. I mean, Arthur Smith called it like a reset, said that he was like confident in what he saw out of him. I bet they end up going back to Ridder.
That's the way of saying we know Taylor Heineke's not the answer either.
Yeah, I mean, no damn kidding. All right,
no damn
next
kidding.
Game up here. Predictable Dallas Cowboys 49, Giants 17. Giants are what they are. I don't have a damn thing to say about the Giants coming out of this game. For the Cowboys, everybody goes off. I mean, almost everybody goes off.
CeeDee
Lamb,
everybody.
First player in NFL history to have three games of 10 catches and 150-plus yards. I mean, he is, since I basically said they need to make him the engine of the offense, he's been the engine of the offense, and he's been really, really good. I can't believe I ever got any pushback on that take, but I did. Brandon Cooks also gets home. Michael Gallup even gets into the party with a touchdown. Jake Ferguson gets a touchdown. Rico Dowd gets 10 carries or 12 carries for 79 yards and a touchdown. Oh, there it is. Tony Pollard. He gets stuffed at the goal line. He has 15 carries for 55 yards. He does nothing in the passing game. I mean, I'll tell you what, Scott, Tony Pollard, Andy and I said it, like, spoiler alert, he's going to get just waved right into the coping corner tomorrow. And I don't really know what to say about it.
Yeah, the coping corner is the Pollard playground. Is Rico Dowdle, as people were saying on Twitter, is he Tony Pollarding Tony Pollard? Because he looks not there. I don't want to make Rico Dowdle to be like this electric guy, but we talked about him as a sleeper. We talked about him as having the chance to clean up in garbage time, although he actually ran in the first half of this game well as well.
He was, yeah.
I'm at the point now. I'm excited when Dowdle's in the game, and I expect frustration from – I know Pollard's run a little bit unlucky. He had a touchdown wiped out by penalty last week and all that stuff, but he doesn't look like the Tony Pollard we fell in love with, and that's the only negative thing you can say about the Cowboys today. I mean, look, we know what they do. A lot of times they disappoint us in the marquee games, but then when they play a team they're better than, I know the Cardinals game is exception to this point, but generally they push around the bad teams, and they kicked the living snot out of the Giants, had well over 600 yards of offense. The Giants couldn't really do anything. It's not their fault. They're playing a third string quarterback who lives at home, for crying out loud, but everybody got home on the Cowboys. You know, Ferguson's an every week starter. Lamb would be a top five, top six pick if we redrafted. I don't know anybody who had the nerve to play Cooks, but he did it. And Dak, for a guy who didn't even play the fourth quarter, was fantastic. To kid Dak Prescott get into the MVP conversation, they probably need to beat the Eagles in the second game for that to happen. But other than Tony Pollard, and yeah, there's no answers here. If I'm a Pollard manager, I'm really worried that this is the best setup he was going to have. He doesn't score. And Rico Dowdle has been good enough that I think he's earned the right to have anywhere from 5 to 10 touches a week.
Totally. Mike McCarthy was very happy with his performance in the preseason. Talked about him a lot there. Talked about him after this game. I think we expect to see more of Rico Dowd going forward. All right, next game up here, Buccaneers 20, Titans 6. Look, Will Levis, the excitement kind of gets drained out of this one here. Kyle Phillips leads the team, 61 yards receiving. Derrick Henry has 24 yards on the ground. That's a tough break. If you played Tajay Spears, it was like a sleeper thing. He had 4 for 42 as a receiver, but nothing on the ground. So I don't really know about the Titans. Like, you know, they're breaking in a young quarterback who's not going to be perfect. The Titans will have days like this, but the Bucs, man, Mike Evans continues to do it. Rashad White continues to do it. He had a long, explosive touchdown catch in this one, 43 yards to make up for his 47 yards receiving. mean, the Bucks are, maybe I'm too hard on the Bucks to not just say like, yeah, they're the team I definitely want to see in the playoffs. It's just, I can't imagine Baker Mayfield in a playoff game at this point.
At least their concentration is tight. Evans, Godwin, White, Kate Otten didn't do it today, but he's had a couple of good games recently. He was really good last week. And you know, White dominates the touches in the backfield. Now, it's kind of a classic Rashad White game because I think his success rate wasn't very high at all. But he had the long touchdown catch. His longest run was 11 yards. He's one of those guys, you have to divorce yourself from how good you really think White is and versus what is his role and what is his opportunity with an offense that's probably at least league average, maybe even just an eyelash over, at least in a positive matchup like this. I'll give Levis a pass for this game. It's just a little bit disappointing to see DeAndre Hopkins have 8 targets and then basically go nowhere. But I thought this would be, and I actually thought this game was going to go, I thought this was going to be like a sneaky 24-21 game. And instead, it was kind of a really boring 20-6 fantasy game. But Tampa Bay is a very easy team to analyze for fantasy purposes. And even the Titans, it's really just Hopkins and Henry. And you play Levis in a pinch. I know some people had to play him today, and I might have even told some people to play Levis over Mayfield, which I feel bad about. Not that Baker broke football or anything, but I was disappointed that Levis played this poorly. But he's going to be okay. He is what he is. He's going to be like quarterback, 19 or 20 or 21 when everybody plays.
All right. Final game of the week. Scott's shaking his head. Colts.
I'm a Patriots fan. I'm glad they lost. Let's start with that and maybe end with that.
Colts 10, Patriots 6. Let's talk Colts first. Jonathan Taylor again dominates the backfield. The Zach Moss stuff was fun, but it's definitely over. You can't drop him. You should hold on to him. Josh Downs. Oh, Josh Downs. Just a couple of really clutch catches, even though he barely played in this one because he was injured. That guy is awesome. Number one prospect in success rate versus man coverage and reception perception. He's showing why. Michael Pittman has a nice game. Could have had an even bigger game. 8 catches for 84 yards. I mean, Gardner Minshew just is. This offense is what it is. But still, like, I enjoy the Colts process. I enjoy this Colts team. My God, they could not stop the run, though, on the other side on defense. I mean, there were times, like, I had a bunch of Cowboys fans be like, damn, too bad we don't have Zeke anymore. That's how down bad they are with Tony Pollard. But that was really my only complaint about the Colts. That their defense didn't really show up, and I just know what I'm going to get out of their offense, but it's nice to see some of their good players pop. Even though obviously it would be great if Anthony Richardson was involved in the proceedings.
Thank God we're spared from a Patriots game next week. Although then they come back and play at the Giants in a very important game for draft position.
What's the over-under in that game? Five and a half points. Yeah. Why not?
Well, let me say this. I think 13 points will win that game, unquestionably.
Yeah, nobody's getting 20. Nobody's getting 20 in that one. One
team might give away the game and lose 20-0 or something, but if you score 13 in that game, you will win. The question is, do you want to win? Mac Jones throws about as bad of a pick as you can throw today. He takes 5 sacks, and it's not like anybody's throwing any hosannas at this Colts defense. The Patriots, Stevenson gets enough touches. It's like, well, 23 touches, that's great, but it's an offense that is so seldom in scoring position, and he hasn't looked explosive as a receiver all year. I like Demario Douglas as a player. I wish I could just trade him to the Chiefs or something. I hate to see him wasted in this offense. Well, he got home today 6 for 84 on 9 targets. As a Patriots fan, I'm glad they won. I'm glad they lost, and I'm glad they don't play next week, and that really says all you need to know about the Patriots. And as you said about the Colts, man, what a catch by Downs to win the game. And they're leaning into their best players. They're saying, okay, Michael Pittman, 12 targets off the bus. They're saying Jonathan Taylor, 23 carries, Zach Moss, 1. And that's what we want teams to do. Identify your best guys, especially when you're playing with a backup quarterback, right? Let's not fiddle around with secondary, tertiary guys. Let's make this the JT and Pittman show. Well, that's what you got.
They bench Mac Jones at the end, like a real benching, do the New England Patriots. The other games, they pulled him out because it's like there was no reason to keep him out there when they were getting blown out. This was not that. They bench him for Bailey Zappe, who throws, you said Mac Jones, he definitely threw one of the worst interceptions you could ever throw. But Bailey Zappe's interception on the like fake spike play at the end was almost as dumb as you could possibly do it. Like it's not as if Bailey Zappe's coming in. A guy that cut in the preseason is going to come in and do anything either. So yeah, there are very few teams more shipwrecked and lost at sea right now than the 2023 New England Patriots.
I got to ask you this. I know producer Collins like end it, cut the tape, but I got to ask enough. You this. What's your take on what's your state of the Bill Belichick address right now? I mean, the guy is, depending on how you feel about him, he's on the Mount Rushmore of coaches. He may be the best coach of all time. It's hard to judge that stuff. His greatness cannot be disputed. All that success he had with the Giants as a defensive coordinator and everything. Now, granted, he was playing with Lawrence Taylor. He's playing with Tom Brady. He did go to the playoffs with the Browns. Now he's an older guy. He's hired a lot of his cronies, a lot of his family.
Yeah.
Team's in a bad spot right now. He hasn't drafted well. What should Bob Kraft do? What should the Patriots do? What should Bill Belichick do? Just unpack all this for me.
I mean, I have no idea why Bill Belichick wouldn't want to be elsewhere next year. I think both these teams just need to part ways. Like,
time for the mutual divorce. Kind of like Brady and the Patriots. There's a time where they couldn't support Brady with what he needed to be successful anymore. So he's like, okay, I'm driving a beater car. I want a new SUV. Let me go to Tampa Bay. Hey, Chris Godwin's here. Hey, Mike Evans is here. Maybe I can call up Gronk. He'll come down. Brady needed a better setup. He couldn't win in New England anymore. Not really. I mean, you know, they could eke in the playoffs and lose in the first round. But they had no upside anymore. He knew he had to get out and get a better situation. But to be fair, the Belichick critic could say, well, you don't like the team around you? You drafted it. You assembled it. No, you signed it. Yeah, this is these are your groceries. If you don't like the meal, it's on you.
It is. And honestly, it's not even just the roster and the players to me. Joe Judge is the assistant head coach. Troy Brown, I'm not even saying these guys are bad coaches, but like Troy Brown's the wide receivers coach. Bill O'Brien is back again as the offensive coordinator. He's got two of his sons. Brian and Steve Belichick are on the coach staff. Gerard Mayo may well be a great head coach, but he's another all these guys he's known forever. Like, bring in some new voices, bring in new perspective to the building, and maybe you won't be the worst wide receiver drafter of all time, right? Like, maybe you'll get like fresh perspectives and fresh eyes on it. Like, I think what you do if you're Bob Kraft is you go into Bill Belichick at the end of the year and you say, hey, you can stay, but like, gotta hire a GM, gotta work with the GM, gotta like make changes on your coaching staff, and like, you can't just pick a bunch of dudes you know. And then Bill's gonna say, no, F that. I deserve better. And then they're gonna be like, all right, well then we need to go our separate ways. And then he'll go and bring all of his friends and buddies to the damn Commanders or the Panthers next year or whatever. And that will be that.
How about the Chargers?
No thanks. I mean, just no thanks. But sure, why not? I don't know. I guess.
Okay, well, that was great. I agree with you, by the way. Everybody needs somebody to talk us out of a bad idea. That's why I manage some teams with Frank Schwab, because if I have a bad idea, he can tap me on the shoulder and give me a reality check. And I hope I do that for him too. There's a time when Belichick was deserving of unquestioned full power and control. And I think at this point in his career, he doesn't deserve it anymore, because most of us don't. Most of us need help. And so I think the way you spelled that out is, I'll co-sign all of that.
On that note, hell of a pod. Scott, this is a good week. There were a lot of really high-end moments in Week 10. Very fun week overall. I enjoyed it, except Colts and Patriots, the first game that everybody had to wake up to.
It was a great week. You know, I know sometimes maybe we spend more time on the guys who are struggling, because that's when a great player plays great, what more help do you need? Oh, that guy's great. Keep playing him, you know?
By far my least favorite thing about doing fantasy content is like, yeah, don't talk about the great players. We know that. It's like, well, that's who I want to talk about. But, you know, whatever. Our first world problems.
For sure. First world problems. But, if we see another C.J. Stroud, Joe Burrow game in the playoffs, I'd be thrilled. I can't wait till Houston and Jacksonville plays again. Hopefully by then, Jacksonville's figured out a few things. But the NFL, a lot of high scoring games this week. A lot of guys did get home. It was a higher score. You needed more points to win your fantasy matchup. And in a season that's been dominated by unders, dominated by defense, dominated by shaky quarterback play and injuries at times, I think more often than not, Week 10 lived up to the billing.
Hell yeah. And that's going to do it for us today. Hell of a week. Hell of a show, Scott. Appreciate you, buddy. As always, appreciate all of you out there listening. If you want to get involved with the People's Panic Meter on the Tuesday episode, sending your emails to fantasymailbag@yahoosports.com. Tell us, don't send in Tony Pollard stuff, okay? Tony Pollard will be represented. So send us other people other than damn Tony Pollard as to who should be on the panic meter. Andy and I will discuss all that tomorrow. Be sure you tune into that. Hey, if you like the damn podcast, how about leave us a rating and review? We haven't gotten any new ones in a while. That'd be great. We'd love to see it. 5 stars only. We love you. We appreciate you all out there. Until tomorrow, we're out.